And I think it's really important when you think about the folks that you're communicating with as like actual people, mm-hmm. and not your list, or you're not blasting them, or, you know, like these are all things that you don't want to do. Like I had a conversation yesterday on Twitter with somebody where they were commenting about no reply addresses. Like, how many emails do you get in your inbox where if you hit reply, it goes to like no reply at bingbank.com?
Sure. Yeah.
And I basically equated that to like, that's essentially giving everyone that you send an email to the middle finger. Like, oh, yeah. Hey, give me your money, but go away. I don't want to talk to you.
This is an intro.
Hustle and Flowchart with your boy,
my boy,
Matt Wolf and Joe Fit.
Hey.
Hola.
Hi. That means hi, I think.
Something like that.
Okay, cool.
Or it means holla.
Holla, hola. Holla. Oh, yeah. Holla. That's good.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'm slow. I never thought about that. Just one L. You know? Get out of here.
You know what we're doing today?
We're talking into microphones.
That's what we do every day.
Talking to a pink microphone.
Yes, you are.
Boring black one. Boring.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Snoozer.
Have you ever heard of AWeber?
I have. It was the very first email autoresponder I've ever used.
Me too. It was actually the first one I ever even heard of.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's ironic because we started at the same exact time online. And probably signed
Such
up the same
coincidence.
Signed up probably under the same day.
Yeah.
And I think Tom Coulter was actually the CEO and founder at the time too.
Yeah. Well, if he's the founder then, he's the founder now.
Yeah. So we have the head honcho of AWeber on the show today.
Yeah.
His name is Tom Coulter. And he's been doing this for like 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Dude's been doing it since college, sophomore year, I think you said.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And now it's grown to, I forget what he said. A lot of people, basically, I think it's, over a million customers now have grown their businesses with AWeber. And I think they said they have 60 plus folks on staff, tons of engineers.
100, yeah.
100, yeah. Tons of engineers and folks to basically evolve this thing all the stinking time.
All the stinking time.
Stinking time. So, yeah, Tom's here and he's basically, Tom's a cool guy, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, on this episode, we talked everything email. So, we talked about what goes into getting your emails in the inbox and out of the spam. We asked him specifically, how does AWeber feel about affiliate marketers? Because we're affiliate marketers and we want them to feel good about us.
That's right.
It's very
selfish of a podcast. You get that, though.
We talked about all of the sort of changes through email marketing over the years. And we also talked about all of the upgrades and things that are coming to AWeber.
And the things that are already here.
Yeah. Oh, dude, the freaking AMP concept. I'm not going to talk about it now, but the AMP thing inside of email. Holy crap. Did you know you could do that before this?
No. We knew of AMP with the SEO stuff, but we'll just leave it there. Basically, it's going to upgrade your emails like big time.
Yeah.
Big time. So, yeah, we talk about all sorts of stuff.
If you want to figure out how to get more results out of your email marketing, this is a masterclass, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was so much I didn't even write the notes. Because I actually have a lot of scribbles on here, but I don't even know what they mean anymore. But basically, we go through a lot of the fundamentals around emailing, but also some of the really ninja stuff you could do with emails.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stupid common mistakes, but they're not really that stupid because most people aren't aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
He highlights what those are so you can actually show up in people's inboxes and not in the spam or all these filters. And essentially, he's like giving you the rule book from the perspective of a dude that's been in the game for over 20 years from the side who actually controls one of the largest, you know, email sending services.
Yeah.
So now you're literally like, we're cracking open that whole freaking thing and he's just spilling the beans.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what I was expecting going into this, but I was kind of thinking we're going to go in and we're going to talk to like a suited, like stuffy CEO kind of guy. And he was like one of the friendliest guys. And I think it was just such like a fun, awesome conversation.
Friendly guys in suits exist?
No.
They're rare, but they exist.
You can't wear a suit and be friendly. Those do not match.
Wow.
No.
Jim is pissed at you right now.
Well, Jim, take off the suit.
Take off the suit. At least loosen the tie a bit, huh?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, no, right, Tom's amazing. Yeah. We had a really, really great conversation, and he actually blew our minds around email marketing and how we could get more results out of our emails. So,
well, there was one thing specifically. He was like, oh, this dynamic, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to talk about it specifically.
You should just say it, and we can censor it out and go beep.
Okay.
But no, don't. Because I don't want to do that. I don't want to go through the effort.
There you go. Just did it. basically, it's going to save us a ton of time.
Yeah.
And it's going to eliminate a lot of like double work, triple work, quadruple work every single day, like that you do, that I do sometimes.
Yeah. It's gonna double my productivity when it comes to writing emails.
It'll probably make conversions better too.
Probably.
Say. So that's a safe bet. All right, Tom is. It's gonna be great. So we'll just leave it at that.
Yep.
And AWeber's awesome. Yeah. There you go. Cool. So, and AWeber, I just wanted to, you know, there's the backstory of AWeber's name too, which I thought was pretty funny. But AWeber, if you've been living under a rock, that's spelled AWEBER.
.com.
If you want to check them out. All right. So, yeah. What notes. Else we got? We're doing the notes thing. So, if you want to get the notes, of course, we're always doing the notes for you.
Yeah.
We can't stop them notes. It's like crack.
This is like an email deliverability masterclass, and the notes are like going to be your email deliverability handbook.
Yeah. And, you know, in classes, you don't probably want to go in public too much right now, from at least the time of this recording. If not, most of these schools are going virtual. So, hey. Might as well learn with this new version of a textbook.
There you go.
We basically made it for you. I just spun, I don't know.
Yeah.
Its eyes just went cross-eyed backwards and all different directions.
It's a 4-page textbook.
Dude, but then you get the letter.
Yeah.
Well, now we're talking legit. I'm telling you, man, like all those back issues, that's probably good 300 plus pages, probably way more than that.
Oh, actually. Dude, I think we're at like 600 pages or something.
Jesus. All right. So get the notes. They're absolutely free if you are quick. Only 2 weeks that they're free for this episode. Just go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp, C-O-M-P. That's hustleandflowchart.com/comp.
Or you can text the word comp. COMP to 38470. That is comp COMP to 38470, folks.
Matt can never have a straight face when he says the text on the biggest grin, goofy.
I hate you so much right now.
Oh, I'm sure. And I want to shout out and give some love to our Facebook group. It's been a revamped Facebook group. As you might have, you know, witnessed a month or two ago, we had Molly Mahoney on and she ripped us a new one on our branding. Mm-hmm. And that's where that group basically was revitalized. So It's called flowchartgroup.com.
Yeah.
Totally free. Just a Facebook group. That's just a little link that makes it nice and short. So Go over there, discuss the episodes. You can hang out with us, hang out with other listeners, and hang out with the guests as well. We invite most of them in there. We don't invite them all because some of them we just don't want in there. Just kidding. We want them all.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't on Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, some of them we kicked out for spamming. No, I'm just kidding.
Dang. Yeah, we're hardcore, man. So flowchartgroup.com. I know we're throwing a lot of call to actions at you, and we're going to throw another one at you because we're sponsored as well.
Yes.
By
Ahrefs.
Ahrefs, our favorite SEO tool, and I would say cheat sheets for the interwebs.
Yes.
To be seen and noticed and all that good jazz.
Oh,
so how do you love, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of Ahrefs?
First thing that comes to mind is their site audit. You go plug in your URL and it will basically do a deep dive in your site of all the technical SEO that you need to do on the
what
site.
What does that
mean? So it'll tell you like, oh, you know, you need to fix this image size and you need to compress this and you need to,
What does that do?
It makes your site load faster so that it helps with SEO. I don't know. It gives you a whole bunch of SEO advice.
You're a freaking SEO guy.
I am, but you're asking me to explain what an audit report that tells you like 100 things that you can do to optimize your site.
What's it going to help me achieve?
It's going to help your site load faster. It's going to help you show up in the rankings for the keywords you want.
That's probably the biggie right there.
And it's, well, making your site load faster does help you show up in the rankings.
Oh, in result, basically, you're going to be seen by more people.
In the Googles. And all the search engines, not just the Googles.
Yeah. I think even YouTube shows up in there, too.
And Amazon.
That's pretty cool. Damn. Forgot about that. All right. So, Ahrefs has been absolutely gracious to sponsor this episode or this podcast multiple times, a lot of times.
Yeah.
They're good peeps.
They're our longest running sponsor.
They are.
They love us. All's good.
And that's all is well in the world. So, go to ahrefs.com. That's AHREFS.com.
And they have a 7-day, $7 trial.
That's $1 a day if you're fast at math like I am.
So here's what you got to do. Go pay the $7, get in on the 7-day trial, run a site audit, find out where all of the places your site is screwed up and not working right, and then start fixing them. And you're never going to want to leave Ahrefs because you're going to see how badass it is.
Yeah, pretty much that.
Yeah.
Or you can even just sell a site audit to your Buddy or something for $7 and be like, yo, you want a site audit? And then it's like a free trial.
Sure.
But you should probably use it on yourself. You probably make more money.
Probably.
All right. So go visit Ahrefs. They're going to hook you up. So Ahrefs.com.
$7. 7 days. Go do it.
Do it.
Let's go talk to Tom from AWeber.
Do it. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. Yeah, we're doing the standard procedure of, wait, whose voice is who? It's a little tough when we're virtual and, you know, the first time we're chatting, but we get that all the time.
So okay. And no accompanied video to go along with it.
Yeah, I know. Do that on purpose to be mystery men.
We do video sometimes, but today with the weather being as it is in San Diego, I think we're opting for saving the bandwidth. It sounds like a lot of people are staying home these days right now, and that's also straining the internet streams these days.
So, I'm really curious on Zoom's uptime these days. So yeah. They seem to be holding their own, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes in the next month or so.
I haven't even thought about that, but yeah, that's very true. You never know. Well, speaking of that, I mean, you have a system, you know, big service of your own too that I'm sure is going to handle maybe a little bit more. Or no, a little bit. Yeah, maybe some trends will be, you know, with the whole virus talk.
Yeah, we've actually. It's interesting. We just pulled stats on virus related keywords being sent in content from our platform, and we're sending millions of emails each day regarding, you know, specific like COVID and coronavirus related things. So it's definitely something that people are using email marketing to, you know, keep in touch with their customers and you know, events and all of those sort of things. So anytime people are gathering and whatnot, they're just trying to communicate out what's going on. But it's seen a massive uptick. It's like, it's just like a hockey stick as far as the infections is, it maps exactly with our you know, platform usage of those keywords and where we're seeing it across different customers.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I actually never really thought of the idea that you kind of could keep your finger on the pulse of sort of what's popular right now by kind of spotting keywords that are getting commonly used. That's really interesting. Yeah. Never really thought of the sort of data side of things.
No. Oh, shoot. We could have a whole conversation for hours just about the data. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So,
well, cool. We may have to touch on that a little bit later after we get through some of the stuff that we had sort of pre-planned on talking about.
Got me curious now. Well, Tom, let's go back and let's give all of us a picture of, you know, who you are, what brought you to where you're at now with AWeber, you know, being the CEO over there and the founder. Take us back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, before you do, I wanted to say with AWeber, I don't know if it was the first, you know, sort of autoresponder service that existed, but it for me, it was the first one that I ever remember seeing or ever hearing about. So if it wasn't the first, it was definitely the first that was actually well marketed.
Yes.
So I'm actually kind of curious, you know, how that whole thing came about and how you got started there.
Well, I'm not as old as it sounds like I am based on this conversation.
That's all Matt.
I started AWeber when I was in college. So I'm one of those entrepreneurial dropout success stories. So some are good, some are bad. Mine so far has been a pretty good one. So I was a sophomore in college. I had started studying mechanical engineering and switched to, that was my freshman year, my sophomore year, I switched to finance, you know, two totally related subjects.
Right.
And in the process, I was selling wireless modems at like computer shows. And, you know, you go to the computer show and you buy all your parts and assemble your computer. I'd have one of the booths there, and I was representing some hardware that was cellular back before we all had iPhones and Android phones and so forth in our pockets with multiple megabits worth of connectivity on them. And I had basically developed a little computer program that would follow up with the people that I met at those computer shows and answer common questions and those sort of things. And it was an automated, you know, kind of email follow-up process, which is ultimately what AWeber became. But one thing led to another. I stopped selling that hardware, and I had been sharing that program with a number of other people in other parts of the country that were also selling the same hardware, because it was something where they would then help me with the copywriting and those sort of things. We could figure, it was a wider subset of people that we could share, like what copy worked and what didn't, and what appealed to people and who had what common questions and how we could answer those best. So it was a really great kind of network of people. And when I decided to stop doing the modem thing and focus on school, because that's hard and important, so my parents said, I stopped doing the program, and all of those people that were using it started coming to me and saying, hey, I'll pay you for that. Like, can I pay for that? Like,
yeah, that's a good start.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, like, maybe I can make this something that people can pay for. And this was back before you had PayPal and, you know, really all the tools that you have to set up an e-commerce or accept credit cards online. There were very, very few vendors that you could do that with. And it was, you know, a month or so to get approved for a merchant account, all that kind of stuff. But ended up launching in 1998. And I ran everything myself for the first 2 years, entrepreneurial mistake number one. you know, today we have 100+ team members just north of Philadelphia, and, you know, tens of thousands of customers around the world.
Wow. That's amazing. So, now, is there a story or a meaning behind the name AWeber?
Yes. I'd like to say that there were in-depth case studies on what to name the company. You know, in my youthful exuberance, it was just kind of a fluke. Back in the day when I was testing this with some folks, we were calling it the automated web assistant. So think like logo with a spider web behind it, like very, you know, internet cliche these days. that wasn't what our logo ended up being, but that was suggested a number of times. And so it was automated web assistant. And it's like, well, that's way too long to name a company. What do I name this? And we were trying to shorten it. And it's like AWeb ass. No, that's a different kind of website. We can't name that. So it just kind of got tweaked to AWeber, and we always capitalize the A and the W because it's automated web, and also because the kerning between the capital A and the capital W looks better than when the W is lowercase. It just looks weird.
Right. Yeah, I'm staring
at it
right now.
We always just capitalize the A and the W. So it's not two different words. A lot of people try to abbreviate it or whatever with the A period Weber. There's no Adam Weber. There's no Alex Weber. It's not, that's not a thing.
Mr. Weber?
Yeah. It's always kind of funny. Back in the day, I used to get sales calls. It's like, we'd like to speak to Mr. Weber, please. It's like, yeah, you didn't read the website at all.
You're like, yeah, I'll connect to you. Just hold on really, man.
So yeah. So automated web assistant, but you can't name your company A Web Ass. That just doesn't work.
Nope.
Get some interesting.
It's a funny story. It always gets chuckles.
That's good. No, that's fascinating. It's over 20 years now since you launched, and like you said, millions of users. It was actually Matt and I both of our first email autoresponder, and it's just wild. I mean, that big success story, especially now when there's so much competition. But you were one of the leading charges out there and way ahead of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're doing. You know, the platform looks totally different today than what it did back then. So, you know, we're constantly, we have an engineering team of 50, 60 people here. So we're constantly, every day, we've probably pushed a dozen different improvements to the site or some functionality behind the scenes in some way this morning already. And it's only 1 o'clock now. So it's, it's constantly evolving.
Yeah. Well, that's let's chat about that and because the evolution of email, I'm sure since the time you started to now, I mean, it's just been light years different. What are some interesting things that, we should all be kind of thinking about? I know there's a lot of best practices that I'm sure you guys live by. Let's start with some of those and then we can kind of open up from there.
Yeah, back in the day, it used to be really simple, somebody gave you permission, meaning somebody opted in to receive your email and you sent it, it was pretty much going to get delivered. And I think that people take that for granted these days. You know, permission is still a huge component of having a successful email marketing campaign. You always think about what you want in your inbox. And think about how you should be treating the people that are subscribing to your to your communications. And I think it's really important when you think about the folks that you're communicating with as like actual people and not your list or you're not blasting them, or, you know, like these are all things that, that you don't want to do. Like I had a conversation yesterday on Twitter with somebody where they were commenting about no reply addresses. Like how many emails do you get in your inbox where if you hit reply, it goes to like no reply at bingbank.com.
Yeah.
And I basically equated that to like, that's essentially giving everyone that you send an email to the middle finger. Like, oh, yeah. Hey, give me your money, but go away. I don't want to talk to you. You know what I mean?
I'm going to talk at you, not with you.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's so, that's like, if you want to not get your email delivered, absolutely have that mentality of like, give me your money. I don't want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Because you won't get your email delivered over time because the major mailbox providers, so think your Gmails, your Hotmails, your Yahoos, Verizons of the world, Comcast, etc. They're generally in most B2C business to consumer type businesses can account for anywhere between 50 and 80% of your overall like subscriber base. You know, and Gmail is frequently like 50% of most people's mailing lists. So you have to play by the rules that they set or you don't get your emails delivered. And at the same time, the way that you get your email delivered to me might be different than the way that we get your email delivered to Matt or Joe, depending on how you interact with it. So just like you guys can be sitting and you could Google the same thing in a Google search engine and get two totally different sets of results.
Right.
The way that you interact with your emails also results in your, you know, one person's email maybe going to the spam folder and you getting the exact same email, but yours going to your inbox. And it's because you reply to them and interact with the whoever the business is or list owner is. You click on their links, you open the emails, you save the email to a different folder in your Gmail account. You might have forwarded the email to another associate. All of these things give indicators, what we call engagement indicators, that yes, you're interested in these things. Whereas like actual spam that you get, you know, you don't save it, you delete it right away, you know, you mark it as spam, you don't forward it to friends, you don't reply to it, like you don't engage with it the same sort of way. And that's how Google's able to make these determinations of like where they're going to put your email.
Yeah.
So you want to be encouraging those engagements with your subscribers. Like, don't just send an email that has like, okay, now what? What do I do with it? Like, there should always be some sort of call to action, like whether it's trying to get them to click through to a website or reply to you or, you know, in some way interact with the email besides just reading it is the best way to overall get your emails to the inbox over time. And it's the same thing as like, so kind of one step beyond that is looking at engagement. People's engagement falls off over time as they might have subscribed today to solve a particular problem. 6 months or a year from now, while you might have their permission to email them, meaning that they opted in at some point, they might not have opened or clicked anything from you in the last 6 months or 12 months or however long it's been. And the longer that period of inactivity goes and the greater percentage of the people on your list that become kind of unengaged, the bigger the signal you're sending to Google and others that like, oh, you know, out of 100 people, only 10 of them actually like open and engage with these emails. So I'm going to put 90% of them in the spam folder and maybe continue with the other 10% in the inbox. But even then over time, if it continues to inch up, maybe I'm just going to say like, nah, maybe this is actually just all spam and we're not going to deliver it at all because most people don't actually engage with this and don't actually seem to want this anymore. So it's why you hear a lot of best practices around email marketing being, you know, run a re-engagement campaign, try to keep your users engaged, but at the same time, look at your stats and look at how many when people have last engaged. And if it's been a super long time, just cut them out. You've already lost them. They're not opening. They're not clicking. They're not additive to you. And if anything, they're hurting you. So you know, it's kind of like if you got the ball and chain tied to your leg. It's holding you back. You know, release the chain and you're free to move forward and interact with new folks. But you know, if you hang on to those old folks that are no longer engaged, it's just going to hurt you in the long run. So get tied up with that list size, you know.
Oh yeah, the list size. I'm like, that's costing you more money too.
Totally. And it's funny because like everyone's always like, well, why would you encourage me to do that? And it's like, you know, the way that our service is based on the number of subscribers, the number of people that you have on your list. So like, it's directly contradictory to our revenue success to tell you to like literally delete people off your list.
Right.
But like, we do that because it's in our best interest in the long term to make sure you have good deliverability and to maintain our overall platform deliverability, and to also just look out for the viability of email marketing as a communication method. Like, if we just, you know, if you kind of wipe snot all over it, it just ruins it for everybody.
So, yeah, that's true.
So what are the common pieces
with my analogies here?
I was like, very timely.
Yeah. One of the common pieces of advice is that I've heard quite a bit recently is early on when somebody gets on your email sequence is to actually ask for the reply, get them to actually reply, and then kind of start some communication outside of the email marketing tool. And that'll actually help your engagement with the email marketing tool. Absolutely. Is that something you found to be true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, but have a genuine reason for them to reply, and don't just, when they do reply to you, don't just give them a form letter response. Like, engage with people. They're people. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that goes to, that's also very similar to when you're writing your emails. If you're not writing an email to 100 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people, however many people are on your list, you're writing it to one person. People don't sit around in a stadium and read the email together. they read them individually.
Hey, Bob, what do you think of this email over here?
Yeah. Like, no, they're not. Whether it's like on the couch, in the car, you know, on a plane, like on the toilet, wherever people read their emails, you know, it's one person. You know, connect with that one person. So like writing it like you're, you know, writing it to Joe or Matt or whoever it happens to be that you're writing it to, like write it to one person. You're much more likely to create that engagement that you're looking for.
It is interesting. I love that you're saying that because that's such a common theme on this show too. With any content that you create out there, even YouTube videos or Facebook posts, it's speak to that one person and remember there's a human on the other side of the screen. Let's go back to basics here. Communication 101 again. Let's have a dialogue. And yeah, we love, you know, engaging our list and asking questions. I mean, we do it on the podcast here too and prompt them to, you know, email, but I would say half of our emails have some reason to reply. Mm-hmm. And guess what? It's like the people that reply are usually your best subscribers too. So it's just going to serve you better and them.
Absolutely. And you create fans that way. Mm-hmm. Like that's how you create, you know, folks that are really interested in what you're doing. It's interesting. Like Google recently launched a new technology called AMP for email, AMP, if you're looking it up. And it's something that it basically turns an email that you can send to Gmail or any Google hosted email address. It turns it into basically an interactive web page. Ooh. In a sense of like, I could be a bank and I could send you an email that has real time updating stock ticker in it so that you always have the most current, you know, stock quotes. Or inventory, you can update your inventory in real time via the email. Some of the things that we've been doing internally, we have like we do surveys and you can embed an actual survey with an actual form response. And then when you hit submit, I can show you the results right in the email. Ooh, so there's a lot of stuff that like, so Google already has support for it. Microsoft and Verizon, who owns Yahoo and AOL domains these days, they're also working on support of it. So like the vast majority of mailboxes will soon be enabled for this kind of technology. And it's the sort of thing that as email marketers, it's always good to be kind of on the leading edge of interactivity because it sends signals to the mailbox providers that people do want the stuff that you're sending. Hmm. So,
well, it makes sense. I would bet that emerging technology like this or brand new technology are kind of favored in the eyes of places like Google, you know, Gmail to get favorable placements if someone is leveraging it to the best, you know, practices.
Yeah, if you're doing good things with it, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, it's just something not a lot of people know about and a lot of platforms don't have support for it, like on the sending side. So Aweber is one of the first that has it built into like our message editor and the ability to send AMP emails from our platform, which is pretty cool.
Have you heard of that, Matt?
No, I mean, I've heard of AMP from like the sort of SEO perspective, the accelerated mobile pages where they basically instantly pop up if you click the link in Google, but I've never I haven't heard about
it. Taught the expert something new.
Yeah. Man. Well, how would you, you said surveys. I mean, I'm sure you could, what, can you embed videos and other kind of media like that?
Videos, there are more limited support for that currently because a lot of platforms see real-time playing of videos in an email client as potential vectors for abuse. So, but you can do the like animated GIFs and those sort of things. But think, you know, anything that can be dynamic. So think like weather forecasts, countdown timers for sales that are actually real and not just that like baloney, you know, 30-second, you know, 30-day countdown that just, it looks the same for everybody. You know, live update count of engagements. So like clicks on blog posts or like social engagement, you could put the actual tickers in there. Shipping status of a package.
Oh yeah. I can see uses in like school announcements and community announcements and things like that, where people need to be updated in a timely manner on things.
Absolutely. So think like a live feed of comments from your blog directly in the email that announced the blog post.
Oh, that's smart.
Very smart.
Twitter feedback, you know, Twitter comments, those sort of things. You could put like a live ticker of those sort of things in there, like who's last doing those. So there's tons and tons of different, like it's really only limited by your imagination. But I think anything you can pretty much do on a web page to some extent, you can do in AMP. So which is pretty slick. So.
Yeah, this is definitely the first time we've heard of this.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anybody really talk about it.
Awesome. AWeber supports it, so check it out.
Perfect.
Awesome. Google AMP for email. So it's AMP. And it is definitely a distinctly different thing than AMP as like the SEO thing that I know that you guys are aware of. So it's similar, but there are different components that are supported and not supported.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Now, I think when it comes to like the sort of email sending, the email autoresponder services, I don't know if it's a misconception or not, but I think it's a misconception that, you know, that the service that you're using has a big impact on deliverability. From what it sounds like your sort of list hygiene and your following best practices and things like that are the bigger factor around deliverability as opposed to the actual, you know, company you're using to send the email.
It's a combination. So like a big part of like, we have a whole dedicated engineering team that is dedicated exclusively to getting emails delivered from our platform. You know, a lot of platforms these days aren't even actually delivering their own emails. They're just passing it off to somebody else where they outsource it, whether it's Amazon or others, which I think is interesting. So it's, you know, do they have the skills internally to do that? So there definitely is a component to like, if your platform is abused by spammers, you know, the reputation of your domains. So think like your click tracking domains, your open rate tracking domains, your image hosting domains, all of those things build a reputation for the mailbox providers. And so like if you're, you know, ABC email marketing company and, you know, tons of bad guys are sending from your platform is going to get a negative reputation in the overall. So like, it doesn't mean that you're not going to have senders on that same platform that do get to the inbox. Like their reputation, that individual sender's reputation might be able to outweigh the bad, you know, email marketing provider's reputation, but it's definitely a very, you know, it's a big concerted effort on both parties. But it's also like having the right technology behind it. So supporting different authentication methods. So there's, an authentication method. You might have heard of SPF, which just kind of authorizes which servers are allowed to send mail on your domain's behalf. So like when you put in, you know, your domain in the from line, so like if you put in, you know, joe@evergreenprofits.com, there's a way to set up a thing on your website that technically in your DNS, but to set up a configuration that says AWeber is allowed to send emails for me.
Yeah.
And then there's also a thing called DKIM, D-K-I-M. It's an acronym. And basically it's a cryptographic thing, but I don't want to get too technical with that because most people don't. It's a point and click configuration kind of thing on our side. Uh-huh. But it's something that basically authorizes us to, again, send mail on your behalf. And it allows mailbox providers to tie your reputation to your emails because they know they came definitively from your domain and somebody that was authorized to send on your domain's behalf. Whereas a lot of providers still are not supporting that level of authentication, which kind of like muddies the waters. as far as any individual mailbox provider being able to build a reputation for each individual sender. So like the things that we do are constantly about trying to attach each individual's customer as each individual customer's reputation as strongly to their own domain as possible. That allows them to build a domain that is representative of their mailing practices. So, you know, I like to say we have senders on our platform that have practices that range from good, better to best. it's not a matter of like bad to good, because the really bad ones we either, you know, are trying to remediate and educate to get better, or we kick them off the platform.
because that drags everyone else down potentially.
Because it can drag other, you know, if it happens too often, it can drag everybody else down. So, you know, we kick dozens of people off our platform every week. But you also have to think about that in the big picture of like, you know, one person can come in and try to create dozens of accounts, and you have to have processes and automation and reputation systems to be able to detect that sort of thing and keep those people off your platform. And a lot of platforms just don't have the knowledge or the sophistication in their technical systems, or frankly, the history to have seen all the different ways that people can abuse you. Let me just say, people are really creative.
Yes, and I'm sure more creative by the day too.
So yeah, and it's a game we like to call it whack-a-mole. You know, it's like you hit one and then another one pops up somewhere else.
Oh yeah. So, well, that's why you have a bunch of good engineers over there.
Exactly. So.
But at the end of the day, we probably shouldn't be sending emails with like bit.ly links in it and things like that that have been used by a handful of bad apples.
Yeah. Oh, more than a handful. I would actually say if you're using a third-party link shortener service, you should absolutely not do that. Yeah. There's really no reason in an email to even use a link shortener service, because like most emails are HTML these days, and you should really not generally have like a visible URL. You want to be linking the words, not the URL, because oftentimes if you have a visible URL, what ends up happening when you send through most email marketing platforms is they're going to rewrite that link behind the scenes so that you can track the clicks on that link. But what ends up happening is the link that's visible might be evergreenprofits.com, but the link that someone's actually clicking on might go to like clicks.aweber and then redirect to Evergreen Profits. And because there's a mismatch there, that can be a reputation sign. Like you've probably seen emails in Gmail that come through and say, this might be a phishing email.
Yeah,
might be a fraudulent email. And those are one of the signs that they look for to potentially do that. So I always recommend link the words, you know, go here to contact our support, you know, click here to contact our support, link those to your support URL. And that way there's not a visible URL. It's just the URL that they click through to. And that's helpful. Totally fine to have the click tracking links on. And it also, it makes how long the URL is completely irrelevant. Like it doesn't matter because no one ever sees it.
Yeah, right? That makes total sense. I've heard some advice in the past that, you know, if I'm sending an email to Joe and I was sending him a link to a website, I would probably just copy and paste the URL in. I wouldn't take the time to say, hey, click this link and then, you know, make that into it, and hyperlink that and send him an email. I would just copy and paste the URL and send it an email to Joe. It looks more natural if I use the URL. But what you're saying makes total sense, is that if you're going to do that, you probably can't use the click tracking because then there's that mismatch. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a difference. So the email that like you and I might personally send back and forth to each other is typically like plain text. Whereas a lot of emails that people send through marketing platforms, they might look like plain text, but they're actually HTML. And there's a syntax difference there that on the receiving end makes your emails look different to a mailbox provider. And that's how those reputations get attached and so forth. So it's a little more subtle than that. So like, you know, like in our platform, we make it really obvious. Like if you want to send a plain text message, it's literally called the plain text message editor. And like, you can't do things like bold and italics and underline and change the colors. Like if you can do any of those things in an email that you're sending, if you think it's plain text and you can make the text bold, it's not plain text.
Yeah. A simple test is go whip out, you know, if you have like a Mac or something, text edit, and you put it to plain text, you're like, look, you can't do anything other than plain text.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. If you can make it different colors or bold it or italics or change the font size, it's not plain text. It's an HTML email.
totally makes sense.
That's really super helpful, because this is a lot of invisible stuff that people aren't thinking about. What are some other common mistakes that you guys see that hurt deliverability, engagement, all that stuff with email?
I would say some of the most common ones they happen before you even send an email. Mm-hmm. Is not setting proper expectations up front when somebody subscribes to whatever it is that you're going to send. Mm-hmm. So like, you want to make sure that you're telling them what they're going to get and how often they're going to get it. And then if you tell them they're going to get, you know, if they opt in for, you know, your free download from your blog, I'm looking at one here on my screen on your blog, like, you know, okay, I'm going to get that download via email. What are you going to send me after that? And how often are you going to send me? Because you and I both know you're not just sending me one email.
Right.
So I guess the follow-up question to that would be, is it okay to set expectations in that first email, or should that expectation be set right there from the point they opt in?
I would generally try to make it at the point of opt-in, and I would reinforce it in the first email and potentially even the first couple of emails. And there's ways that you can segment those lists. Like, hey, if you'd rather only hear from us once a month, click this link. Mm. And like on our back end, you can tie like someone clicking a link to, you know, add a tag that just says monthly. Mm. And that way you can just segment your subscribers and know that anyone that's got the monthly tag, you should only send a follow-up newsletter to them like once a month.
Right.
Or you might add them to a different campaign. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can do with marketing automation these days. Hmm. To be able to segment folks based on their preferences and not like what you as the business owner might do. Because like you in your head might say like, yeah, I'm going to send them one tip a day. Mm-hmm. And they're going to start to get them, and they might deal with them for 4 or 5 days, and they might unsubscribe if they're unhappy. But you and I both know they're far more likely to either keep mashing the delete button, or eventually when they get fed up enough that you keep showing up in their inbox and they don't want you, they're gonna mash on the spam button.
Yeah.
And now that's just told the mailbox provider that they don't want your email. Even though they signed up originally, but what they signed up for and what you delivered didn't match their expectations because they weren't clear. So they get upset about that. Whereas if you're clear, you know, it's kind of like you go on a date, and it's like up front at the beginning of the date, it's like, hey, we're going to go out to dinner, we're going to go see a movie, and at the end, I'm probably going to try to kiss you. You know, it's like up front, like, okay, ground rules established. At the end of the day, you can make sure that like if everyone knows that's probably going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Get ready.
Super well doesn't work like that, but you know, set the expectations up front, and you're not likely to be surprised and caught off guard and make somebody upset. So
that makes sense. And I like the fact that, you know, of course, segmentation is huge with email, and the fact that it's almost like you can give them a good customer journey or a custom journey if you're allowing them to self-segment based off of links and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We were talking internally in our internal chat system this morning, and somebody saw a newsletter somewhere where the first message after you signed up said, you know, we've already sent our issue out this month. You know, it's going to be next month until you get the next email. Mm-hmm. You know, go here to look at our most recent archive kind of thing to see the most recent issue they'd already sent. And so our team was like, hey, can we like, I wonder if they change that every time they send out their newsletter. And I was like, probably, like, knowing the platform that they sent, it didn't support that. So our guys were like, can we do that? You know, like, how can we automate that internally? And so we came up with a little, some conditional content syntax that could look at what today's date was. And you could basically enter in this little snippet that would say, like, what your normal publish date is. And if it was before that date, it would say, hey, the newsletter is going to be delivered, you know, next week. And if it was after that date, it would say, hey, the next newsletter is going to be delivered next week. And you make it completely conditional, which means it's completely automated and you don't need to update anything like that. So it's like little things like that make it really, really automated. So you don't have to go in and tweak these things, but make that customer journey really personalized. We have a bunch of folks that have, I'm totally blanking on it. Like the crowdfunding around what the heck's Patreon. I was totally blanking on the name of it for a second. They have like Patreon supporters, and they send out a newsletter, one that has ads and one that doesn't have ads. And they were sending out two newsletters. And in the course of them talking with our customer solutions team here, they were like, hey, you know, you could just send one newsletter out. And they're like, but we want ads in one and not in the other. It's like, yeah, but you have your Patreon subscribers tagged as like paid subscribers, and you have the free ones aren't tagged. So basically you can use a conditional tag around your ads. So if you're a paid user, you just hide the ad.
Yeah.
And they were like, they basically made that noise. Like,
oh. Well, we actually do that right now in our own business.
So. We literally
it saves all this overhead. So now they don't have to create two newsletters. And while that was relatively easy, you know, it's now they're literally only working on one newsletter and they just conditionally put the ads in.
Well, just think about how much time that just saved and probably consistency of the emails too. I mean, it just benefits everyone.
We literally do that in our business right now. Every weekend we send out a newsletter to our audience. The one goes to our customers, one goes to our non-customers, and 90% of the email is exactly the same.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. You just saved us a lot of time.
Them in the platform and then use a little bit of conditional syntax, you could make that one email.
Nice.
Oh, so smart. So,
perfect. Cool. Love it. Thank you.
One topic that I wanted to chat about while we had you is the topic of affiliate marketing. Joe and I, a big piece of our business is affiliate marketing. Now, the way we do affiliate marketing is we never drive directly to an affiliate link. We always create, you know, blog posts and content that might have some affiliate links embedded in it. But I'm curious what your stance and what your company's stance is on affiliate marketing and affiliate marketers, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions that, you know, the autoresponder companies that are out there, they hate affiliate marketers.
There's definitely some email marketing platforms that dislike affiliate marketers. We do not have a blanket ban on affiliate marketers. And I'd quantify this a little bit. There's kind of like two different types of affiliate marketers that I see. There's folks like yourself that like are driving thriving content, you know, related business. You're creating a lot of value on your own sites, and you happen to support some of that by occasionally referencing some other third party thing that you get an affiliate commission off of. Mm-hmm. And it's very transparent as to when, you know, you're sending somebody to an affiliate offer and what your relationships are. That's one side of affiliate marketing, and that's the awesome side. And, and that's, you know, those are the folks that are, you know, that are hustling, and, you know, they tend to be small businesses and creating a lot of really good value out in the world. Mm-hmm. There's a different kind of category of affiliate marketers that are, the best way to kind of quantify them here, like maybe like kind of churn and burn.
You can tell how it is, Tom.
You know, they're acquiring people to email to through questionable means.
Right.
All of their emails tend to go directly to third party affiliate landing pages, where like the first thing you do on that page is it's asking you for your name and email address. And it's like, I'm already signed up to your list. Mm-hmm. Why is every email you send and sending me somewhere where it's asking me for my name and email address? And why are you sending me four emails a day, and every one of those emails goes to a completely different company each time?
Yep.
Like, so you can see where like there's like one side of affiliate marketing, and then there's this whole other category that is, you know, that is bad and does get a really bad name. And I think rather than make a distinction between the two, some platforms have just said no affiliate marketing.
Yeah.
That's not AWeber. We don't ban affiliate marketing, but we do have, you know, a very robust reputation system. We have all kinds of things that we look at as far as the campaigns that our customers are mailing, you know, the people that they're adding to their accounts, where they're coming from, how frequently they're mailing. Like we look at dozens and dozens of different metrics around each sender's account and lists and subscribers. You know, how many of those subscribers are in other customers' accounts? What are those engagements there? Are they likely really email addresses? Are they typos? Are they bots? Like, you know, there's tons and tons of, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes in order to do email marketing effectively and to keep the bad guys off your platform. Because any self-service, unless you're enterprise and you got to sign a big contract, and even then the bad guys go through those processes too.
Yep.
But like any platform that's self-service, a significant component of their business has to be actually kicking bad users off your network.
That must be tough to keep up with too, because like we were saying earlier, like you're just getting new, just different methods and.
Yeah, you kick one person off and they come back with a dozen different accounts in a different direction that, you know, you may or may not be able to tie back to the original one. Fortunately, the tools are pretty good at doing that these days, and we've seen just about everything at this point. You know, mm-hmm. Knock on wood, there's always something different next week. But that's part of what differentiates, you know, us from maybe new platforms that might be, you know, a little shinier in one area. It's like, yeah, and they might get your emails delivered for a little while, and then the bad guys are going to find them, and it's going to kill them because mm-hmm. they don't have the capability or the resources to deal with the level of abuse that they will get. So, and it's not a matter of like they will or they won't. They definitely will. It's just a matter of time.
Yep. Yeah, it's when. Well, that's what benefits you guys being 20 years plus in the game. And and you're still evolving, like you were saying, you got the team. Let's highlight AWeber a bit and what's coming up for you guys. I know you mentioned prior to starting, you guys have landing pages now, and I'm sure a bunch of other capabilities that we're not even aware of.
So, yeah, on Monday, we just launched some formal landing page. We've always had like custom web form builders and flyovers and pop-ins and all that kind of jazz. But we now have dedicated landing pages that customers can come in and build. We've already seen hundreds of those being created just in the first couple of days of this week, which is really awesome to see. Generating thousands of subscribers each day, which is super cool. But at the end of the day, a lot of our tools are, you know, the kind of the philosophy that we approach things with is make a really easy to use tool that is also powerful when you need it to be, but simple when you don't, and even simple to do the things that are more powerful. So like the tagging or the conditional content that we were talking about, like those things are all pretty straightforward. It's just a matter of like knowing that they exist and that you can use them, and it's pretty cool. But you know, we're constantly looking at new technology to make sure that our customers are able to engage with their subscribers in the most effective ways, whether it's the Google's, the AMP for email, whether it's the authentication profiles that help make sure that your emails get delivered to the inbox with SPF and DKIM, to conditional content, to tagging, to list segmentation, all the statistics that go along with it. But it's funny, like, you know, I talk about all those things, and predominantly the vast majority of our mail volume is around somebody that just publishes like a newsletter, whether it's once a week or once a month or once a day. Like they just publish a regular newsletter that goes out to a whole bunch of subscribers, and they might segment it a little bit here and there, but like it's generally fairly straightforward, fairly simple things. So a lot of the time that we spend on is making sure you do that effectively. So think like there's a lot of platforms, most of our major competitors, like think about when you put your content into your newsletter to send it out. Do you individually click on each one of those links and make sure that the link is correct?
I know we do. And that it's valid? but yeah, I doubt most people do though.
Most people don't.
Yeah.
And most platforms don't tell you when you screw it up. Whereas we have a behind the scenes link checker that you probably never even notice when you copy and paste one into our platform, because it won't, nothing looks different unless it's broken. So if it returns an error page, we'll flag that in the editor so that you know, like, hey, there's a problem here. Go fix it.
Nice.
And it's like little subtle things like that a lot of platforms don't have, that it's like, how many emails do you get where it's like, oops, we sent out the wrong link. You know, we sent out a broken link.
All the time. You know, yeah. Even happens, from the best marketers too.
But there's simple automation that we do on our back end to make sure that customers don't shoot themselves in the foot with those sort of things. Or like send out an email with a blank subject line. Like, you know, it's little things like that, or the default subject line where it's like replace your subject line and like send it out like replace your subject line here. You know? Yep. And it's like simple things like that while they sound really trivial, it's that level of polish that you get from a platform that's been there, done that. Versus somebody that's like, you know, they have some they made some slight tweak on it and they gain a little bit of market adoption based on that slight tweak. But it's all these other ways that they have that they leave their customers, you know, hanging out to dry by like, you know, screwing up simple things.
Yeah.
So, I love it.
So it's interesting. So it's definitely interesting and ever evolving.
So for the people that are listening to this episode, that maybe they're with another platform already, but they're like, man, this stuff sounds amazing. I'm going to switch over to AWeber. What does the process look like of moving from another platform to AWeber? Because I know that's probably one of the biggest pain points if you're already using something is just the thought of, man, migration might be a big pain in the butt. So what does that look like for somebody wanting to move to you from another platform?
Oh, man. So I have to asterisk this with, that was not a setup question at all.
No, it was not.
We did not pre-plan that. I know from my own experience that moving between platforms is a pain in the butt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we actually just about 2 weeks ago, we started a free migration process where we'll do the whole migration for you from one platform to the other, because we do recognize that that is something like we're intimately involved in, not only our platform, but like the vast majority of most of our competitors' platforms. So we often know how they work better than the users themselves that are migrating away from them. So we actually have a free, we kind of call it our free concierge migration, where you just give us a couple of key details, whether it's you want to give us access to that account or whether or not you have like the messages and your subscribers and whatever tags or anything you might have. And we can import them into your account automatically for you and make sure to the best that the system you're moving away from allows us to export like a state. So like if you have automation campaigns or some like a follow-up series set up so that we can kind of move people across and where they pick up kind of where they left off. Some platforms support that better than others, but we can put people in the right spots in the overall sequences. Wow. So we do the vast majority of the work for users and make that as simple and stress-free as possible. So because that can be, depending on the size of your operation, can be a bit of a daunting task. And we've done some pretty mammoth migrations for people, but at the end of the day, it's a fairly straightforward process for us because we've done, it's like you might have done it once or twice, we've done it a dozen times this week already.
Yeah. Oh my god!
By the one person in our team has done it at least a dozen times this week, let alone the others that are doing them as well.
So, I don't know if that person likes their job or not. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Part of the reason that I have such a like depth of being able to, see all the different kinds of stuff that people do and like, the little tweaks and twerks is like somebody might tweak this over here in the finance industry and I can go use it for retail or I can go use it for a blogger and, they might only hear about these tips in their specific niche, whereas we get to see them across all different swaths of the world.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's valuable. I mean, you're looking at really the data, cool. Like we were saying earlier, you're seeing interesting things that most people probably are never aware of.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, are there, speaking into that, are there any other, I know at the beginning we kind of mentioned that you're with the current state of the world right now, you are seeing a rise in the talk around coronavirus, but are you seeing any other trends forming recently in what people are emailing about or anything like that?
We see a lot of like seasonal trends and those sort of things. Like I will admit I don't spend a whole lot of time personally looking at, kind of content trends. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of the like typical Valentine's Day stuff, and you'll see St. Patty's Day stuff, and those sort of you see things around Christmas and shopping and those sort of stuff, Thanksgiving, all the big like holidays, both in the U.S. and internationally, you see those kind of keywords kind of pick up and drop off, but it's I think the coronavirus right now is definitely the hot topic button of the day. So like we're only marginally halfway through the day here today, and mail volume around those topics is probably going to be another order of magnitude higher than it was yesterday.
Wow.
So it's interesting to be able to see, like I just hit refresh on the graph in front of me. I've hit refresh on it a couple of times while we've been talking, and it's gradually inched its way up.
Wow.
It's definitely gonna be higher than it was yesterday by a good clip, which is fascinating to be able to look at just as the world kind of, the world brain space is kind of totally around this, both externally and even internally. We've been planning things with our team here. So how we're reacting now, but also in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, you do have a big staff, so taking care of them and making sure you guys are good too and keep an eye on the trends, I think is really fascinating. So, Tom, what's the, you know, we'll wrap it up here just so you can get off here. What is the best place folks can go check out? I know aweber.com, I'm sure, is the main place.
Yeah, definitely check us out on aweber.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under aweber. You can find me on Twitter under T. Kulzer, or you can hit me up via email. I'm tomk@aweber.com. So really hard to track down.
So keep it wide open.
Always happy to interact with folks and learn what they're doing and how we can provide more value for them.
Love it.
Sweet. And finally, too, what's a book that you just find yourself going to often or maybe recommending others? Something quick off the top of your head, yeah.
The book that I've recommended most recently is Remote.
Remote.
By the guys over at Basecamp.
David Work Hanemeyer From Home, Hansen Remote, and,
Workforces, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to blank on the other guy's names.
Jason Friedman.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
David
Hanemeyer Hansen and Jason Fried. Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is. Sweet. So. All right. Well, Remote it is. Awesome, Tom. Well, yeah. Check out AWeber, everyone. And thanks for taking the time with us today, too. This has been fascinating.
Yeah. Very eye opening.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, buddy. Have a good one. Hey, thank you for listening to that episode. This is Joe Fear. I'm sure you probably already knew that. And Matt is not here right now, but I'm pretty sure he enjoyed the episode just as much as you and I did, because, you know, he went into the production of kind of making that thing right along with me. So thank you very much. And I want to give a quick shout out to our buddies over at Easy Webinar. These guys have been supporting us for a long time. And Casey Zeman is just a super good guy all around. He's actually been on the show before. He's the founder of Easy Webinar. So if you look up Casey Zeman on any podcast platform you're listening to, go check him out. Go check out his backstory, what he's all about. You can learn a lot about webinars as well. And right now, you know, Easy Webinar, these guys are actually hooking you up with a great trial. It's a completely free trial to test out their software, soup to nuts. Check it all out and see if it's a good fit for you. If you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, that's HUSTLE. If you didn't know how to spell hustle, there you go. So if you go to easywebinar.com/hustle, you can go grab a free trial. And Easy Webinar literally lives up to its name. It's super simple. I mean, super easy. And it does all the stuff that you're looking for in any kind of thing with webinars. I mean, they literally cover every single type of webinar you possibly can do. So from live to automated to scheduled at specific times and all these crazy features in between. Can't even list them all out. I'll be here way too long. They give you a ton of advanced analytics, what's working, what's not during your webinar based off all these actions. You'll see who attended, how long they stayed, if they clicked the offer or if they didn't. Basically, you're going to make more money and you're going to work less with this thing and you're going to create better relationships with the folks that are listening because it's a good experience. You want to give that good experience along with some great content, of course, and a killer offer if that's what you got for them. So go try it out yourself. Go check out easywebinar.com/hustle. That's easywebinar.com/hustle. All righty. So that is the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, enjoying it. Hopefully you did. I'm pretty sure you did if you lasted this long. And go check out Easy Webinar when you get the chance, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. Before taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. Every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.